and welcome to episode 148 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mass from Mars, and I'm joined by the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And our very own Merkin, Tony Esmond.
What's a Merkin?
You know what it is. You know what it is.
I've never worn one. Because I've told you, if I take my clothes off, I'm a bit like a ginger Alsatian with its tongue out.
Fucking hell.
And on that image. On that horrifying image, it's time to introduce our guests. Yes, we've got a couple of special guests here. This week we're joined by two of the guys behind a hugely exciting new comics endeavour known as Horde Comics. You might have seen them about online, etc. It's our pleasure to welcome Andy Turner and Greg Mason to the show. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
You are chaps.
How are we, gents? Are we well?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, not bad.
Awesome.
I'm a bit frightened.
Why?
Yeah. Stunned into silence.
I haven't done many podcasts, and you guys scare me.
I'm looking forward to hear all about these whores that are in your comic. Is that right?
No, it's Horde. Horde comics.
Oh, right. Okay. You should have said that.
I tell you what, though, Tony. Speaking of that, do you know where you can get great value for money? Comic House,
Lidl.
He's not wrong.
Yeah,
he's not wrong.
No. They have very good fish and meat section now, as well as their vegetables. Anyway,
my mum swears by their bakery.
Oh yes.
Okay.
It's got everything you need, but they're
it
not sponsoring
smell,
us.
Other supermarkets are available.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Unless they sponsor you, in which case they're going to help you.
Yeah. Pretty much. But the people that do sponsor us is comichouse.com.
Oh, yeah. You did it.
Yeah. Yes. I somehow get it back on track every week. I don't know how. Yes, good old Comic House. They help support the show, keep the lights on, keep us in Fruity Pebbles and Yazoo. I couldn't think of anything else to put in our rider. And I thought of sweets and milkshake.
Yazoo, the group.
No. What do you mean, Yazoo, the group? Who's Yazoo?
Yeah. Looking from a window above, it was a group, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, sorry, that's me being told. Dropping a knowledge bomb on me.
Don't you know you crap fucking 1982 musical history?
One hit wonders.
Yeah.
You're going to get emails, Vince. Yeah. Like 2-3 emails.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Am I going to find this on YouTube and think, this is an amazing song?
No.
No.
No. Oh, right, okay.
The Flying Pickets did a good version of it.
Yeah, true.
Are you just agreeing with him, Dan, because you can?
Yeah,
do you know what you're talking about?
Yes, I'm cool.
You'd be great in a pub quiz, Tony.
Yeah, I do. I cheat in pub quizzes. I make no bones about it. I've got a fucking phone with Google on it. I'm looking it up. I don't care what you say.
Oh, no. Do you know what else you can find online, though? A fantastic selection of comics on Comic House. Yes.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, thanks. If you want to buy hard copies and get the money to go directly to the creators, there's loads on there. But I think the big thing that everyone's talking about is the Comic House app, which is available now.
That's all anyone's talking about.
Probably because we talked about it first, and people like to follow our lead, don't they?
Copy us. Yeah, they copy us.
Yeah.
Because we're cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we're shepherds, not sheep. You know what I mean?
I didn't realise there's the Awesome Comics already on the app, which is a bit annoying.
Is it?
There's another one, isn't it?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, I have 5 shit in their garden. So.
Yeah, there's only one truly awesome comic. And you know that. Yeah. That's ours.
There's one story in that awesome comic that really annoyed me, so much so that I had to screen cap it and send it to you two. This was several months ago.
Oh, God. Right,
that's to vent the frustration. And I was like, oh.
Let's go to war with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think according to the bylaws, you have to turn up outside the house, scream there can be only one, and then chop their heads off. Yeah. Sorry.
Like, all right.
Hey.
That's the small print. Did that one.
Yeah, experience the quickening, and then...
I'll tell you what.
Small print. You get more comics knowledge every time you kill someone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Tony, how many people have you killed?
Yeah.
The truth. The
Tony's a mass murderer.
He's basically the Kurgan. cross with the Dulux dog.
Oh, if you want to call me as the Turden, then please do.
You're inviting Photoshops now.
Yeah.
I'm like the Ginger Kurgan.
Oh God. But yeah, you can find an awesome comic on the Comic House app, as well as loads of great digital stuff on there.
Yeah.
Dan, what's been on there recently?
The featured print indie comics for sale at the moment are Tales of Mystery Volume 1, Liz and Men Volume 1, Radio On Issue 1, Meanwhile Issue 8, Comic House Issue 10, Little Heroes Anthology Part 1, and Kid Monkey 2. All ready to buy.
There you go. So many check those out. Many of those titles we have talked about on this show.
Yes.
We're in.
And quality, one and all, even if we are in them. Yes, but if you want to find out more about the app, which is essentially Netflix for comics, and for only £3 a month, you get access to all of those comics on digital, a 14-day free trial, so go to comichouse.com to find out more today. And there you go. That was one of the most chaotic sponsorship ads.
Done. That was one of the better ones, actually, I was thinking. Yeah.
When you say chaotic, that's a mark of quality.
Yeah. If the world is reversed and we live in a bizarro world, that was actually a really good advert.
Sometimes I do feel like I live in a bizarro world.
Yeah, you know it.
Although I will be honest, I don't know much about bizarro. I'm just going on what everyone else says.
Is that something we can find out about on Sunday when we go to the comic mart?
Oh, the comic mart. Yes.
You can pick up a load of bizarro issues.
Brilliant.
I am making a shopping list. For those who don't know, we are recording this episode. I mean, you're hearing it at the normal time, so it doesn't matter to us, but we're recording it a bit early. Greg and Andy are very kindly recording early with us, because on Sunday, when we normally record, we're going to be out at the Comic Mart in London.
Might get a bit of audio, mightn't we?
Might get a bit of audio. Might buy some dirty paper. Obviously comics. That's what we're talking about.
I'll take an extra big bag with me so I can take them all home with me.
Really? I mean, you seem to buy loads of comics like pretty much all the time, Tony. You must have take a suitcase with you to stuff like that.
Yeah, I do take quite a few. Well, you've seen my little comics room, haven't you? You know, there's quite a lot in there.
Yeah. Tomb with which you will end your days.
When you buy the last stack of comics, you'll just block the door and that'll be it.
Yeah,
you're not coming in, I'm going to die.
Yep.
It's a good way to go, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, will it be? I don't know. But what book do you think will finally do you in, Tony? Which will be the final book?
Well, the one that will finally be the one where I'll go, it's not worth living, has got to have something to do with cats or autobiographical in it, really. Let's face it.
If that's the case, then I'm going to write a lot of cat books.
I like you're actively engaged in Tony's demise there.
What are we doing? Writing this comic to kill Tony with.
Yeah.
Nice. Whack it straight on your CV. I wrote the comic that killed Tony Esmond.
Yeah. After reading this, he gave up life, threw himself out of a window.
Probably. So we'll give it the comic mark. I've got a shopping list. I've never. Like, I can't remember the last time I went to somewhere and, like, had, like, a list or was actually sort of shopping. Because normally, like, when we're at shows, we either got a table or we're exhibiting.
Well, there's not that many back issues at shows anymore, is there, really?
No.
Yeah.
Are you going to do the shit comic competition?
Yes, let's do shit comic Okay. That's a good idea.
Well, if nothing else, we'll have to get some audio of that talking about what we've purchased there, won't we?
Yeah, and the Gunster's coming, isn't he? The other Gunster, Jason.
There's quite a few people. Yeah, I believe Sarah Harris is going to make it.
Sarah's coming, yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah's coming with our award.
Yeah, so who knows? You might get a bit of audio. There might be some photos on Instagram. Now that we've got an Instagram account that I keep forgetting about.
You've got to do that dance yet as well, haven't you?
Oh, no, I know.
You're going to do it with the award when you get it.
Oh yeah, that'd be good because then it's like double. It's like promotion and humiliation in one, isn't it? So at least I'm
getting
something out.
Do like a sexy dance with the award, where you're sort of smooching it and grinding up against it or something.
How big do you think the award is?
I was thinking more of how big you are.
I don't know how.
Which went silent, really.
Remind me, what was the dance about again? Was it a forfeit or something?
It's only for charity.
Yeah, because I was on the Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour, like, and I said, oh, if you make your target or whatever, I'll do a dance and video.
Why the fuck did you say that?
I don't know. Person. I was just caught up in the general good feeling of the day.
You know that the public can't resist the concept of you dancing, Vince. The phones are off the hook.
I know. I'm one step closer to becoming a GIF.
What happened at Live Aid if you'd done a dance?
World hunger would be no more.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not going to talk about it too much because I might bottle it and not do it if everyone.
Good idea.
Because I'm quite scared.
Nah, you've got to do it now.
You've got to do it. Tony can record it on Sunday.
Look, shut up, you.
If you talk about doing it on the podcast, it means you've got to do it.
Man. I know.
You've pretty much just cemented yourself into doing it.
I know. Oh, God. Yeah. But yeah.
This could be the start, Vince. You'll be on next year Strictly.
This could be.
I've always wanted to be famous. Yeah. I've always said I'm going to be famous one day.
So, will it be like Strictly Pod Dancing or something like that? Where you just
no, you've got a title as well. Yeah. This is being further cemented as we go.
Yeah, you're shitting on it yourself, mate. I know. You're making it worse.
Yeah. I'm thinking, I've got it all spread out in my head. Here we go. So, Russell Square, which is next to the Comic Mart, is a lovely little park with fountains and trees and benches. I see from the distance Vince running towards us, skipping and high-fiving strangers and grabbing members of the public and just dancing with them in a cheerful way. That'd be nice
if we could turn it into a musical number.
At the end for your finale, I want to see you smashing popcorn with your knob.
that's a callback to episode.
When I heard that on the podcast, that I instantly thought of when Tony squashed them cookies with his balls. Coming a bit of
so basically, you can't take any of us out, apart from Dan, who hasn't threatened to ruin some sort of food with his genitals
yet. That's it. He's trying to do something with confetti. Maybe Dan can crush a trifle between his tits or something. and then you're all equal with the confectionery and the genitalia then.
Yeah.
How about gimmick for the podcast? Pull out some tiramisu from the crack of your ass.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, that's where it comes from anyway, doesn't it? I hate tiramisu.
I like tiramisu.
Well, if it's on your ass, you won't taste it.
That's true.
Yeah, I certainly won't be.
Hal Ewing told us that you can drink water by sticking up your bumhole. Do you remember on that episode?
Did he?
Yeah, he said salt water. You can survive on salt water by squirting up your bumhole.
Huh. Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Marvel writer Hal Ewing told us that.
Yeah,
there you go.
Imagine he's sort of shipwrecked on the beach and he said, everyone, look, we know drinking water, but if you spit seawater at my arsehole, we'll be all right.
You know when it's a hot day and you're in the garden and you can't be asked to go in for a glass of water? If you've got anything close to you, you can just do that, can't you? Take a foil out with you.
Jesus. Yeah. Jesus. What kind of...
You must find, there must be a shell that's got a good shape. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Probably not to go to barbecues.
But anyone who's listening to this, if this is your first episode, I'm so sorry.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Tell everyone about us.
Don't report us to the police.
No, yeah, please don't. But this is a comic book show. I knew this one was going to be a bit chaotic this week. But yes.
Yeah. And, I'm on, did you? Bring them on.
Yeah, but you know, they could. Has someone got a drink with ice in?
Sorry, that's me.
Oh, Dan.
You are drinking, aren't you?
It's scotch, isn't it, Dan? Go on.
No, sadly not. No, it was Coke.
It's like Mad Men around your house.
Yeah. You are like the. What was the main character from Mad Men?
Don Draper.
You're the Don Draper of the podcast. Oh, my word.
Yeah.
That's not true at all.
Wow. I think some future photoshops will prove otherwise. But anyway,
how was the Roy of the Rovers from last week?
Yes, thank you. It was Dave, wasn't it? Dave Kennedy did that.
Dave Kennedy, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
thank you as good. Always, Dave. It made us laugh, especially the little Tony in the corner.
and Barry liked it as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
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 I seem to remember that suit from somewhere.
Yeah. And thank you to everyone for the kind feedback on last week's episode. It was
nice, isn't it?
Hugely enlightening. It's reignited my taste for like 80s comic, you know, the stuff I used to read when I was a kid. So I'm definitely going to have to see it. Well,
when Tony gave us some of those annuals, there was the photo bits, like the photo stories. And I sort of said that I think those photo stories just made up a lot by the people in the office with the camera, and they just fuck around to fill the pages up. And then Barry more or less confirmed that on the show.
Yeah, so, didn't he?
Yeah, that was quite pleasing.
See, we do know what we're talking about sometimes, but yeah, thank you everyone. This week we're going to be talking comics and the Horde. Obviously Horde Comics had a successful Kickstarter campaign just recently, which they've just started throwing out to the backers, etc., and it obviously looks the business. Okay, lads, as it's your first... Is it your first foray into self-publishing comics properly, both of you?
Yeah, pretty much. First release.
Oh. So that's why we thought it'd be a good idea to talk to you about it, because there's obviously a lot of our listeners sometimes are in the process of making comics but haven't necessarily published anything yet. So we thought it'd be a good chance to talk about putting the first book into the wild, as it were. But before we get into the sort of details of it, what led you both to creating this comic?
Oh, where to start? If I go well back, Greg and I have known each other for maybe probably pushing 15 years now, and it was back when we were at uni. We used to just talk about doing something. I've always enjoyed a little bit of writing, and Greg's been an artist for as long as I've known him. So we throw ideas back and forth about doing something, but you know what it's like when you're, you know, 20, 21 and you're not really motivated to actually get something done. It's nice to chat when you're meant to be doing your coursework and stuff, but it's not something you know about getting ahead and actually finishing and doing.
Yeah.
And,
true, you know, but also, like, back then, I do wonder how it would have panned out if we'd had the facilities to do what we did this time round. There was no Kickstarter or anything like that. It was just, I mean, we had no idea where to begin, and I think that kind of put us off doing a big project, because the idea of doing a comic, of creating a comic, seems so simple compared to the marathon of actually doing it. It's a big job, man, and it's easy to get wrapped up in new ideas and then want to move on to other ideas. And I think we did that a lot. We spitballed for like 10 years almost. It was bizarre.
And then sort of fast forward a little bit, you know, you get on and you go and do things and have a normal life and stuff. And then more recently, it's from when I started going to cons, actually, a few years ago. It was at Kapow when they were still running that up in London. Really great show. Okay. Really enjoyed it. And it was really good. I loved it. I ran into John Locke up there when he had the first issue of Afterlife Inc. out. And it was really my first exposure to the fact that, oh, hey, like, you do books that, you know, it isn't your Marvels and your DCs and your Image. Like, if you have an idea and you want to put the work in, you can have a regular job and you can still make some comics. And he puts it out. So he was a guy that I met, and he had a project that he was passionate about. And I bought a copy off him on that day. I've still got it on my shelf now. And that sort of was the seed of it again. And then I started going to a lot more cons. Vince, I ran into yourself and Sean at, was it Melksham a couple of years later?
Yes, myself and Sean Dobie at Melksham. That was the first time we met, before I knew you had any plans for any comics.
Yeah, and that was, again, it's sort of, okay, so you can be a regular person. You don't have to have a company behind you. But if you really want to make this happen, then you can. So then the two of us with our other mate, Chris, who is originally an archaeologist, which is completely unconnected, but is now a UX designer, we sort of got together and started chatting about it. He wanted a project to build a website. The Horde Comics website will be going live hopefully before the end of this week. He wanted to do something like that, and he's interested in comics as well, and he does a little bit of writing too. So we got together, and originally and this will form the next book we've got out, actually. He was going to do something longer form, and we talked about maybe doing a 4-page story or so that we'd maybe put out just as a little teaser to start getting people through the website. But as we got talking and had more short ideas, and we wanted to make it bigger and more, that's where the first volume of the anthology eventually grew from, and it went from something that we might do as a little aside to a book in its own right, and it's ended up being the first thing we've brought out. And I think, for me anyway, Greg, feel free to disagree, when you're coming out with something as your first book, I mean, feel free to be wrong about disagreeing as well. But like, for me, I sort of thought, really, with your first thing that's coming out, it feels more achievable if you're doing something that's small and controlled, rather than diving straight into, you know, this is a 20 issue epic that we're putting together here. And it also gave us a chance to give us a little bit more variety, because the hope is that with the anthology now, you know, there are stories that, you know, different people will enjoy different stories for different reasons, because as well as the different sort of themes behind the stories, we tried to put together something a little bit tonally different as well. So there are some that are more serious, some that are outright stupid and funny. Like, the idea is that we'll get people on board with seeing our stuff, and there'll be something that different people gravitate towards.
Yeah, and yeah, I do agree. I totally agree that the anthology in the end turned out to be a much better idea. It's just more palatable for a first project. And I think it's easy to get, you come up with these ideas, you get really excited about them, and before you know it, you're talking about graphic novel number 5 before you've even started number 1, because you get sort of carried away. And then when you sit down to actually create it, you think, oh shit, I've got like 15 years worth of work to do here. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, now that it's coming out, or it's out, I think the comic itself will evolve as we do each volume. It's very much a feeler sort of comic, so maybe the feel of the stories will get more sort of focused as they go on, or maybe they won't. It will depend on the reaction, really.
I think feedback is what we're listening for this time around, to see what people respond the best to.
Yeah.
So are these stories just one and done, or are there potentials for them to move on episodically, sort of thing?
There are a couple which are very much designed as being a one-off, and then it goes in a varying scale. There are some of them where we haven't planned a follow-up to it, but I feel that where we've ended up with the world that's come out of the story, you could do something else and it not feel crowbarred in or for the sake of. And there is one where a follow-up is already penned for, or well on the way at the very least, for the second issue.
Yeah.
So
have you read it?
Yeah, already.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Don't need to thank us.
I'll read anything with my name in, guys.
And it's a really polished and accomplished, especially first sort of out the gate, like, especially an anthology piece, because I've seen there's a lot of titles out there, even if they've got quite a few issues of it, some anthology titles, the first issue is usually quite rough around the edges, whereas this one's quite polished, like, straight out the gate. And you've got a great sort of board of creators on board as well, haven't you? We got here.
How did you find them? Because there's a couple. It's an unusual mix you got there, guys. Is it Stellardia? Is that the lady's name? I always get mixed up.
Stellardia. She's
normally a colorist, isn't she?
She does quite a lot of visual design work. I forget exactly where I ran into her. It might have been through Facebook, or it might have been through just seeing some of her work. But
isn't she a colorist for one of is it Ricardo Moe's books?
She's got a new one out soon. I tell you what, I will look it up as we talk, and I'll tell you what her new book is.
I've got a feeling she colored Colossi, didn't she? I've got a feeling she did that one.
That was highly recommended on That's an
excellent book. Yeah, really good. I'm literally wearing the T-shirt for that at the moment. Mm. Yeah.
Is this Berserk, Andy?
It's Business that's Stella Deer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she's based over in Spain. I had a conversation with her on Twitter originally, I believe, said that we'd seen her work. Would she be interested in maybe working on something if she had some capacity? She came back. She is incredibly enthusiastic and really into
It's really nice, isn't
the design. Yeah, yeah, she's lovely. So we went through and talked about it. I sent her a couple of different scripts, actually, because Business is one of the later stories. And we had a couple, and we thought, right, we'll go with whichever one the artist takes to the most. And she really got into this one, and we had sketches back very quickly. She did tons and tons of like design work and concept pieces for it, and I'm really happy with the direction she went with it. And it came out really well. I think in terms of visual style, that's probably one of the more unique ones in the book as well. I think she has a different style to the others that are that are in there.
I know
it's very loose.
Her and who else is it? I'm looking at it now. Joe Flood on Got Milk. Those are the two artists that also did the letters as well. Because other than that, you got Rob Jones, who gets everywhere.
Yes.
He knows he does, and I know he's listening. he's a great letterer, so he's doing all the other books. But I noticed that Joe and Stelladia sort of lettered their own work. Was that something that they suggested as soon as they came on board? Oh, can I letter this as well?
I tell you what, I was actually pleasantly surprised. Again, our first foray into it, and for the most part, I assumed we'd be getting letters done. Got Milk that Joe Flood did was finished first. He'd put letters on the roughs that we'd look through, and obviously I assumed he would do that anyway, just as a placeholder. Yeah. And then I was very surprised in the first instance when he sent them through and they were already lettered. He left the text layers active in case we wanted to change them. But he just run through with it. And again, Joe was super collaborative as well. Again, we thought we'd be a little bit challenged by time zones because both Joe and Beth were over in the US, which makes it a little bit more difficult to catch up with on calls and so on. But again, super collaborative, really keen on making the story as good as it could be. We had a lot of discussions about, you know, how the flow of the pages would work. I mean, we write in a way that I'm really keen when I'm doing writing anyway, that I do want to give the artist some like guidance. They're not just, you know, it's not like the script for Suicide Squad was, I imagine, where you write everybody fights.
That's written on about five pages.
I mean, don't get me wrong, people can be individuals and like what you like, but you're wrong. It's a bad film. I like to give a little bit more than that. I like to give sort of the action beats as well, because of course, you know, they're fun to write. But the discussion with all the guys was, hey, you're the artist that's going out and drawing this. If you've got some ideas, don't feel that if you change something around or you add something in that's yours, you're part of the creation of this as well. You're never going to hear from me. That is not what I wrote down on the page. I'm not going to get into semantics and things like that. So I was really keen that they do that. And Joe was straight in with some ideas of, well, how about we turn this into this scene here, and we expand this, and the page turn comes here. He was really good at that. And I think he's obviously got a talent for the action beats as well, because it comes out the pace that I was hoping that we'd get from it. And when Dave, who I worked with on that one, it was his original script as well, from talking to him, is what he wanted from it as well. So it came out really nicely.
How long was
it? Go on.
Go on, Greg.
I was just going to follow up on that and sort of say, I think me and Andy have a... I think because we've been doing kind of brainstorming projects for so long that we're very into like the creative process, specifically the sort of the collaborative side of it. And I think we enjoy starting a project together, and then I mean Andy does the bulk of the writing because he's a writer and I'm shit, but I'll throw concepts ideas in there. We'll shake up the bag, and then afterward, I like to feel like before we start, there's some question on who came up with what, and I think at the end of that, that's a proper sort of collaborative process. I think it's good to put that across to the artist, if that's the way you want to go, because obviously yeah. I understand if you've got a singular vision you want to stick to it, but you often get the best work out of artists when you do that, and they feel like their creative juices are actually flowing as opposed to just drawing somebody else's script, which is also fun, but it adds that extra element, I think.
That is one of the great things with comics, as in kind of when you, as a writer or an artist, when you pair up with one of the others, the sum is greater than the parts. Do you know what I mean? Like come up with some really, like, you see something in the script and you say, what about this? What about this? And then before you know it, you've made it better than it was. I feel if you just want an artist to do the script as is and you pay them the money, that's fine. But if you're kind of collaborating on a project, the back and forth definitely is the way to go.
Yeah. The work always comes out better because as long as you're not too precious about the thing that you've created, and at the same time making the right decisions for it, I think, and then it's just about the work then. And I think perhaps sometimes people can get a little preoccupied with their audience or how am I going to make money off this or where I'm going to push it. And for me anyway, it's something that I just try and keep out of my mind until the work's done, and then we can talk about that. Because as soon as that sort of bleeds into the way you're thinking, for me anyway, it kind of wrecks my workflow as an artist.
So how would you go about approaching an artist for a collaboration, say? Because like, I've got a few ideas that I want to write and have an artist for, and I'm developing some stuff. But like you say, I want to get an artist on to actually collaborate. But of course, the idea is essentially it starts with me, but then you want to bring someone on board. It's not like you've had two people in the same room and then they come together at the same time. Just say I've developed it for a couple of months and I go to an artist and try and get them on board. How's the best way to do that? Because it's something that I've wondered.
I think you should just be straight shooter. Like, you just got to make it clear that it is your baby and you get final say, but you're like, at the same time, you're still 100% open to any suggestions or anything that you could potentially expand the story or the feel of it or make certain scenes feel better. I know when the story that I illustrated for Andy, which was Quiet, I mean, it started at 4 pages and then it ended up at 7 because I kept adding stuff in, and because Andy's a nice guy, he didn't get on at me, and luckily we agreed that it needed to be in. It fleshed it out more. But I could have put a shitload more in, but luckily he didn't have to rein me back because I know the way me and Andy work. But I think you still have to have those conversations. But I would just be just honest about it.
Also, the flip is the fact that someone recognizes your skills and abilities as a writer and want to work with you and doesn't want to kind of encroach too much on your creative process.
Sure.
I think when we were going into it on the first one in particular, that was something that we were concerned with, because of course, like, especially as this was our first book, you can't go to an artist that you don't know already and say, hey, I write, you know, I haven't got anything I can show you. There's nothing that I can show you in terms of finished comics, so I'm going to have to get you enthused enough to read a script that I've written. And for me, we haven't taken a script to an artist to try and get them involved with collaborating with us until the script is already at a point that we can be enthusiastic about it. Like, if I've got any doubts over the script, I wouldn't expect an artist who I don't know and has got no stake in it to get excited about it until I can be excited about it. And then I think that comes across. If you're genuinely enthusiastic about your script, then I think people will gravitate towards that and get on board with it. And I think...
Yes, some artists like to talk to you about it, don't they? Some artists like to explore some ideas. I've worked with some artists who I just send it off and they draw it, you know. It does depend sometimes. I do like the backwards and forwards. Sometimes, I'm going to be honest with you, and it hasn't happened to me recently, but sometimes it gets a bit much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if it's something you wrote about 2 years ago, you know, and it's sort of...
Yeah, sure. It really depends on the project. If
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you force... even though I've just said what I said, if you force that...
The opposite to that.
The opposite to that. If you force it and it's not really needed, then it can have the opposite's effect, you know.
Yeah, I get you completely.
It can wreck
yeah.
the story, yeah.
And some people insert their own agendas and stuff, and you have to sort of almost clarify, no, it's this, really. You know, that's something I've had to talk about, you know, crazy. But they're definitely the conversation, and it's easier now, isn't it? Because you've got, I mean, I'm on WhatsApp with all the people I work with, you know, and we chat about everything all the time. And I quite enjoy that, you know, because it's not intrusive, like, oh, God, I've had another email. I'm going to have to sit down and reply to it. You know, it's not like that anymore, is it? You know?
Yeah.
So you can with Nick, he sends me an image and he says, oh, what do you think about this? And I say, well, what about this? And we have a talk about it. It's really good, you know, and same with Susie Gander and all the people I'm working with at the moment. It's quite fun, you know, to do that.
Yeah, it is fun. At least that's the part that I think I enjoy almost as much as drawing it. It is. It's good fun, man.
Okay,
that was all I needed.
So, can you tell us a bit about the Kickstarter process with Horde?
Yeah.
Okay. So we didn't want to start it until we knew the book was finished. So, what's probably felt, especially for you guys that run into me at cons and stuff, probably think we've been talking about this forever.
I think you'll find that with a lot of creators. There, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff that's work in progress for a long time. I mean, certainly, John Late. Away, fantastic looking book, a labour of love, but it's been a couple of years in the making because you want it to be right before you do anything.
Yeah, I feel better about it now then. no, like guilt assuaged. So with that, like really, especially because it's the first one, I mean, before we ventured into it, I back a lot of stuff on Kickstarter, some of which is your guys' fault, but
Dan.
We know that it's getting to be a more competitive marketplace because not only are there bigger names that are well established out there looking to fund their next book, but then you've got people who are making obscene amounts of money for like naked versions of all of DC's heroes. How that hasn't been shut down, I have no idea. Obviously, it's a more competitive marketplace, and I know anyone who's been on there and has been burned by something, either by it not coming out or it taking another 2 years after you've given them money for it to come out, people are more cautious with it now. It's not like the bubble is, you know, it's a bit more wobbly. I wouldn't say it's burst yet, but I was very conscious of the fact that I didn't want us to go onto Kickstarter with something nebulous that I didn't have a date for. I wanted it to be ready to go pretty much by the time we went live and said anything, not only because it means we've got stuff we can show off in terms of artwork, but then people haven't really got to take that much of a risk with us. It's pretty much a pre-order, right?
So you were so quick, man. I mean, you basically closed your Kickstarter, closed, the money was collected, and then there was a book in my inbox literally that quickly, wasn't it?
I think we made the decision before we did it that we didn't want to be one of those Kickstarters where you're consistently waiting. Like, I hear about them all the time. I hear about them, you know, on your podcast sometimes, that you've been waiting a couple of years. And it's something we wanted to avoid. And I would recommend people do that, because I think it gave us better stead when we actually put the Kickstarter up. And I think it will give us better stead coming to the next volume, which is way underway already, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
When people sort of realise that they're getting what they're asked for, and they're getting what they're asked for while it's still in their short term memory, then they'll remember the next time, you know. Oh, I got that.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. Completely. Even if you're waiting 3 or 4 months, sometimes it's like, oh God, really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's a lot of it around, even in the professional industry. Shit's light all the time. If you can avoid it, it's good to avoid not giving people the thing that they've paid for.
Because the consumer will learn as well. I mean, I've certainly, like I say, had my fingers burnt a couple of times. There's one Kickstarter email recently where the creator sort of said, you know, the book is coming, but I've got other work that's come up. And, you know, I'm working on this, and it's I'm going to be doing this for the next few months, and then I'm going to be getting back on this project. It's coming. I'll show some work in progress. Yeah. Which
you don't want to win it.
Yeah, you don't
want to get the fucking money.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is about a year later as well.
I
guess the reason's probably one that stings you a bit as well, because get it, people got to eat, but if you're saying I've got to do this other work, well, you're behind on work you've already been paid for.
Yeah,
you know, to be harsh about it. Like, you know, at least say that you're really ill or something.
And
naming no names, but there's a certain Kickstarter that if you look at the page, it's like page after page of complaint about people who haven't received their book without a reply. And then the geezer is currently doing a GoFundMe so he can travel to San Diego to go to the convention.
You got to give it that. It's clearly.
Yeah. Those things you don't ask, you don't get. So if anyone wants to fund me to go to San Diego.
It seems a weird
just
thing.
Just pay me the money, I ain't even going to go.
The funded people to go to conventions and stuff. Odd. The cosplay people who kind of like have a patron and they get like send their followers like semi-nude photos or whatever. I don't follow them. That's what I've seen. Where's that money going then? I thought that was supposed to fund you going to cons or whatever. I don't know, maybe it's been pissed up against the wall.
I mean, personally, I've got to tell you,
the geezer's amount as well to go to San Diego is like $3,500, and I'm thinking that's a lot of money. Like,
if you're going to take the piss, you might as well.
You might as well take
all of it. Yeah, bleed and dry. Fly business class.
The thing that made me laugh was when announcing
about going to San Diego. He's talking about to pick up an Eisner. I thought, well, you haven't fucking won.
I look at the backed Kickstarter list and I thought, well, I've not fucking had that one yet. And that was supposed to be.
It's quite a depressing state sometimes.
Actually. Yeah, looking at that, I don't bother.
Yeah.
I do it once every couple of months. I will go through and have a nice, you know, satisfaction ticking a few off.
Mm.
And then if they haven't turned up and there's no things, I'll send someone a message, or I will go and see if something has said it's been delivered, but I've deleted an email.
Yeah.
I will like curse myself for deleting my emails too often and then email the person saying, I'm not sure I got that. Maybe there was an error. I definitely didn't delete it because I'm stupid. But,
what the fuck's that one? And I've gone, they've sent it a couple of months ago. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like when it goes out of your memory, because there's always something new, not just the independent stuff. The same way, like, you know, you didn't watch 24 or some TV series. I ain't catching up on that now. It's too late. It's gone. Like
goldfish now, aren't we?
A way to sort of bridge that gap as well, while they're waiting for it, because obviously there is some delay while you put the Kickstarter up. You've got to get funded, you've got to get your shit together, you've got to make sure it's as polished as it can be. Yeah. So a decent video on there is always a good shout. Like I before we made the video for ours, like we just went onto YouTube and checked out all the different ones they could get. And there were some good products, like there were some good comics on Kickstarter, and they were just like, they were accompanied by like these really boring videos, like proper, like if that was selling it to me, like I would have just switched off straight away.
Yeah, on a webcam in their bedroom just talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that you're not going to have like, you know, filmmaking quality sort of equipment, but you got to do, so try and do the best with what you've got.
Yeah.
Which is why we tried to.
And your Kickstarter video was sublime.
Yeah, was we really like that? You. Yeah. I didn't even know what your comic looked like tonight. And to be fair, I pledged because the video just made me laugh. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I had no idea what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh fuck it, that's fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it was repeat viewing, which I think is quite important. Like most Kickstarter videos, you watch a video and then you're like, right, let's have a read of the campaign and see what I'm actually getting.
Yeah, if you look at your viewing figures, you'll see that I looked at it quite a lot, quite late at night.
But you always stop just after the make it rain bit. It like drops.
That's enough for me.
One Kickstarter back in at the moment is that bloody Ninja Commander or Commando Ninja.
Oh, yeah.
I want that to fucking come through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is fucking ace. And the video on now is fantastic. Yeah. Obviously not comic related, but.
We're proper mugs, we are, though, because we always, between the three of us guys, we always go, right, we're not going to back anything on Kickstarter for a while. And then the following day, we fucking do.
I know. I think I've got to stop.
Have you guys thought about doing a GoFundMe to fund your Kickstarter backing?
Yeah, so we can buy comics and go to the comic mart.
Yes. Yeah.
We'd like £55 so the three of us can go to the comic mart.
If you do that, the circle will be complete.
It will be, won't it? Yeah. We'll be eating our own asses once again.
Oh.
Now, I got to tell you, with the videos, Greg has really... Greg's interest in doing it and has really turned me around on the videos, because I was surprised, because my Kickstarter shopping, I very rarely watch the video because of that experience that he shared. I usually find that it's not going to be much for me. What I'll probably do is scroll through, see what the art for the comic looks like and what the general concept is going to be.
And sometimes you know the creator who's doing it, so you're like, right, I already know it's going to be... Yeah, sure, I don't need to watch the video.
And you can't watch everything. I mean, I quite often watch him on the train or at work or something, and I can't have the sound up anyway. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I just look for the artwork generally. Yeah.
But, he turned me around because people... you know, were tweeting us about it or would come up to us when we saw you guys in Swindon, for example. People seem to really take to it. So I'm a huge convert onto the videos now. And Greg's really fun in the next one.
My favourite... Go on, man.
No, stop.
I was going to say, my favourite bit is where you pretended that you played the piano. That was my favourite bit of the whole thing.
I like the bit where he had just taken a roast dinner.
That's because you came round for Sunday dinner. That's when we decided.
Literally, it's when we came round and we said, right, we'll talk about plan and do this video today. And I think we were doing something else as well. We were maybe looking at some of the artwork for Quiet. And then we literally did it and we talked about the things we needed to get and said, right, I'll. Greg's wife Katie was doing the dinner, but I took the credit for it by getting it out of the oven. And you know, also behind the scenes, you know those dishes that we're doing at the end? Didn't even fucking do them. Just scrubbed up.
You're so gangster. Yeah. I wish NWA had that attitude. I
didn't realise you had a bad man on the podcast. Did you?
Yeah. But I did say thank you very much for the dinner. We should have put her in the back as a thanks, really, because it was a very nice dinner.
It was a lovely dinner.
Two types of potato.
Well, hang on, we showered her with cash, so it was all right.
Yeah, that's true.
Hang on. Yeah. Two types of potato.
Yeah, mashed and roast.
Oh,
nice.
That's how the other half live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, three, really, because I was eating it.
You have to start shouting at Joe to do your potatoes better.
No.
Only one type of potatoes to throw your dinner against the wall.
Yeah.
Turn the table over.
Yeah, flip it and walk out. Come back a week later.
Yeah, you're sleeping on your own tonight.
I demand roast, mashed, and chips.
I'm afraid this is not good enough. You're frozen out. Don't talk to me.
Do that mighty boosh. I'm turning my back on you. Do a bit of that.
Oh, yeah, amazing. what were we talking about before we got onto potatoes? Oh, yes.
Kickstarters. Yeah, videos.
Yeah. No, so obviously, and that was a big success, but you had to think about like the stretch goals and the just everything, didn't you? Like the tiers. And so how did you actually plan this out? Did you like literally just write everything down and, you know, just brainstorm ideas? Did you physically have it down in notes and put notes backwards and forwards?
Like a lot of it, I mean, the Kickstarter platform isn't too bad for letting you draft stuff and put things together. And then if you want us to come back and look at it, then you can see what you've got so far and you can sort of do it. But in my day job, I spend a lot of time on stuff that was actually oddly transferable. That like the industry is entirely different, but I do a lot of sort of data on spreadsheets and planning communications and contracts and stuff that came in handy when we were working with the artists. But on the Kickstarter front, it was just a matter of planning it out. And I wanted to build some sort of framework that it was fair. I didn't want to go that anything should be an absolute fortune, even some of the high-end tiers that, you know, to be in the second book or what have you. I wanted it to be reasonable and accessible for people, not like, you know, 10 grand will get you this, because we're a first-time comic producer. I'm not Marvel getting you to be in, like, you know, the next Spider-Man book. I'm, you know, we're an indie outfit doing a book that we hope people will get on board with. So I wanted to make everything priced like that, and then I wanted even pacing as well. So I was keen that, I know for postage, especially if you're overseas, can be absolutely crippling. So I wanted to give the digital people as well, you know, because absolutely no problem. If someone lives in Australia, I don't want to pay twice as much for the book, you know, because you've got to pay double again in postage. So I wanted to make it so there were different tiers available for those guys getting digital as well. So that's why we came up with the three main tiers, which were the book on its own, sort of like the Future Shock edition, which means for people who back that level, as we get into volume two, we'll send them a standalone copy of the first story from volume two when it's ready. So they sort of get an early preview of what's coming up next. And then the sort of deluxe behind the scenes annotated scripts for people who would go in for that as well. And then obviously there's other things that by their very nature have to be physically based. So that's when we went into the additional art prints and the postcards and, you know, things that sort of those ancillary materials that people get into as well. So we put all those together, and probably the bit we spent the most time looking over was just the numbers. So it made sure that they all synced up. I didn't want it to be uneven or unfair to anyone. Probably I agonize over it more than your average person who scrolls down Kickstarter and goes, oh, that one. But I made sure that the numbers all balanced out what I felt was the fairest way. But yeah, I felt like it was something worth putting the thought into before we went live. Because again, first book, I just wanted everything to be as professional, as well put together as we could be. So people are more inclined to take a punt on us because, you know, right now people don't know our names. They don't know the name Horde Comics. So I think I want to give them a very good impression from the limited amount they see of us, and then carry on building on that by delivering a book on time.
Yeah, because you're bleeding that through to the way you work as well. I mean, obviously, as you can tell from this episode, they like a laugh, and they're just as childish as us. But you're looking at this in quite a professional manner, aren't you? You know, you want to put out the best possible product, and also, like, when people work with you, you want to have that professional reputation so that moving forward, it's just, you know, gets the name out so that people say, oh, working with them is really good, and then that's the best way to do it. So would you say, I mean, you brought up contracts, like working with artists, and this is something I've always wondered about, because I haven't really had that many dealings in terms of contracts and things like that. We've talked about them on the show before, haven't we, Laz, like a little bit, in terms of getting things in writing. But without,
this is really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously definitely. Without going into too much detail of your workings, how did you approach that sort of area of it?
Well, I can shout out one of the other artists, because we got a lot from working with her, Beth Varney, who did the art for the story Berserk in the book. So she was the first external artist we worked with, and immediately, like as soon as I saw her website and the schedules and everything that she works to, the professionalism was really obvious, and it's something that it really sparked that in us as well. So when it comes to working with people, like, it's not about being a lawyer and having, you know, someone look over these documents. We wanted to have these contracts in place. You know, and they can be as formal or as informal as you like. You can do a contract, or you can do it just, you know, a written agreement. You can call it whatever you like. But the main things we wanted to cover were what our expectations were in terms of total cost and delivery in terms of when the art is finished. Obviously, with completing something like artwork, there is going to be a degree of flexibility. So there's, you know, you put in the timelines that you're looking to work towards. Most importantly for the artist, though, we wanted to get very clear in terms of when they could be expected to be paid. Again, it's that confidence in working with us, really. I'm sure you guys talk to more artists than we do. Everyone's got a horror story of, you know, that time a project sort of collapsed halfway and they didn't get paid for everything, or the person wasn't forthcoming with the money. So that's one of those things. And it seems like one of those, I don't know, is it some people, I think especially British people, it's a bit gaucher. You don't really talk about things like money. Yeah. But
certainly in the small press as well, I hear a lot of stories of people making promises of things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if you do this, then eventually it will become this. and we'll get stuff on the back end, which won't.
I'm not interested in anything like that.
Mm. No. Yeah, I agree.
Well, if someone says to you, I'm going to give you 80 quid for this, and then they don't, that's highly suspect.
Yeah.
Besides the legal, the small legal ramifications, like a contract really removes a lot of potential mess that you can have with people. People just tend not even to try and, if they're that way inclined, which most people aren't, but if they want to try and fuck about, then they're less inclined to, especially if you've had a, they've signed something or you've made it really clear what it is that you expect.
Imagine it acts as a good way of dissuading people who would otherwise be a bit kind of flaky about it. Because once the contract, everyone's like, you've got to be serious about this.
I'm coming up against this at the moment. The guys are sort of hinting at it, but I'm doing something and writing something, and I'm finding it really difficult to get paid on it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I've had to search through for the email going back about a year where it was, you know, it was agreed a price, and I'm sending it off, and it's like, oh dear God, it's just a pain. We do so much on Goodwill, don't we? And everything we do up front, and occasionally you do find that people let you down.
I find it's best just because it is uncomfortable to bring it up sometimes. And it's definitely a British thing.
Yeah.
But it's like ripping off a plaster. I would just, you know, go, look,
just get it done.
Let's just get this out of the way first before we can start talking, because I need to know we're facing in the same direction as far as being potential business partners.
It's such a small community as well. Small community. It's going to bite you back on the arse, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? If you're not.
Of course it is. You can't do that sort of thing forever and expect to, especially when you're essentially trying to sell the thing that you want that thing to be out there and people to enjoy. And then you're kind of tarnishing it with a bad attitude about a deal that you've made. It's bad, man. It is. It's really bad.
One that's worth considering in the contract is the non-disclosure stuff. It's a tricky one because
you
want to build up hype for the project by getting the artist to do sketches and whatever, but you don't want them showing their hand too much and revealing the magic. Do you know what I mean?
Story.
I would just say, look, don't show anyone anything,
and then
I might leak something out in dribs and drabs depending on how things go, you know.
How we've gone in hours, especially because, you know, the thing with artists as well, that of course they've got portfolios and they're going to be going for other jobs, so you know, without going into too much detail, basically the agreement we made with everyone that we worked with was that excerpts in your portfolio or whatever are absolutely fine. You can do non-story spoiler, you know, to showcase your art. That's absolutely fine. Show those as what you want. Yeah. In terms of displaying the whole thing to anyone, it's timed. So in the future, when this book's been published and out for a couple of years, then if you need to show it, you showcase it. You're not going to spoil something that isn't out yet. So in terms of those original images, technically the artist drew them. They drew it to a script that, you know, I or one of the other members of the team wrote, but they're the ones that did it. So really we have it on license to them to use it, and we generated the story, but the artwork, the physical lines on the page, that's their stuff. It's just part of the agreement that
That's worth pinning down as well. If someone's doing traditional artwork and they're drawing it and you're paying them for it, you do need to clarify as to whether you own that original artwork as well. That's important to clarify.
The physical artwork.
Yeah.
You mean,
so I'm saying, I'm paying you to draw it, but I'm also paying you to own. There's a number of ways of doing it. I mean, I generally just pay people to draw it, but you can pay them to draw it and also then you own the original page. That is something as well considering.
I mean, if you put that in the contract, because otherwise they could go out and sell the original page, and that may increase in value because of the quality of the story or the comic.
They may sell the original pages before you go to print.
Yeah, good
someone
point.
Who
yeah,
posts them yeah. Online, you know, that's another thing that can happen. Point. It hasn't happened to me so far, but you know what I mean.
One way I got around it was when I was doing El Malvo last year. I would send sketches and stuff to Luke and Ben, and then they would decide what to do, push it on social media. So it kind of I was out of it. I just gave them the raw stuff, and they would like put it on social media in dribs and drabs.
So, yeah, that's how we tried to do it, really.
Yeah.
And once they've done that, you know it's free reign. You can post the same image, can't you? You know,
And then once it's out, you can. So essentially, if you're doing it that way, then you're paying them to draw it and for you to sort of own it for a short period of time.
Mm.
Until, and obviously eventually they'll be able to just put all of it out there. But not for a little while.
Yeah.
But then afterwards, essentially it's theirs. They can go and do whatever they want with it.
I think really what it all ties down to between this or, you know, money and payment schedules and ownership and everything, it's all about having, you know, just getting rid of ambiguity, because it's so much easier to have those conversations early where everyone knows what's happening, everyone's confident.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to have that before anyone started anything or any money has changed hands versus when you are 4 months down the line and, you know, things are happening and then you have to decide these things on the fly after someone's, you know, fucked it. It's easier to have those things early.
Yeah, and you're more likely to make a bad decision that way, especially if you're annoyed with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
So you had several different creators on this. Did you have like a template sort of contract in place, or did you sort of did each person get a different kind of thing?
Everyone had, especially because we're dealing with shorts. I think there'd be a bit of a difference if we were looking at an ongoing in terms of the way that schedules and everything would work, because obviously you're looking at over a longer term period. But for all of the guys you worked with on this one, we really felt it out working with Beth for the first one, and then I wanted to ensure we had similar terms for everyone else. So over the course of this book, we've sort of developed a template now that we can apply to any agreement that we have that sort of states for an artist general things about ownership, weird sort of legal background stuff as well that you don't think about, that, you know, confirms they're a freelancer and therefore we're not going to pay their taxes and stuff.
Interesting. But
all that other stuff is in there as standard, and then we can customize it for the particular story we're doing, the number of pages, what we come to agreements in terms of what percentage is being paid up front and what's paid at the end. So easy to plug it in. So now we've done the work to get it done, doing it again is now pretty simple.
Yeah, and it must have taken a lot of the pressure off the artists, doesn't it? Because like they know exactly what they're getting, and any future artist that you work with, you know, they can be confident that they're going to have it in writing, and you're going to be
very clear
with them.
Nice and simple.
I think that was key for us as well. Again, being like a first time outfit, knowing that people could be confident in us, that we're saying, like, if I'm telling you that I'm going to pay you this much up front, and then when you finish, you send me the proofs. They can be as low res as you like. I will pay you the final payment within 7 days, and then only after that are you obliged to send me the high res finished ones. Then you know, everyone can be confident that even if you didn't know me and I had a really shifty face, then
shiftier.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got, you know, wear like a lot of black clothes, so I could be, you know, mistaken for a wrong'un.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I say touch wood. I've not had too many bad experiences. There's one working on a cover for an American writer, and that's taken the better part of 10 months. We're still not anywhere finished on that. So, but apart from that, yeah, it's usually not too bad. I've said to most people, like, I'll take half up front and then half at the end. And most people say, oh, no, just take it all at the front. And it's like, well, I try to advise against that, because some artists get fucking lazy if you pay them up front.
You've got to dangle the carrot.
Yeah.
Different people do it in different ways. With some artists, I pay 2 pages in advance.
Yeah.
And it encourages them to do the next 2 pages. It's almost like a crack of the whip.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I'm a lazy artist. It's best to pay me like a penny per panel.
An hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When things get really bad, it's best to like kidnap a family member.
There is that fine line of not falling out with someone, though, isn't there? There's that. As a writer, you know, you want, oh, come on. You can't ruin the keenness that they've got. And you can't have a
crowd. It does.
Do you know what I mean?
It flow, like all that business. Like if it gets to that level, it does. It takes the enthusiasm away. It becomes something else then.
Yeah, it does. Just becomes a job that is a pain in your neck sometimes.
Yeah.
So I wanted to become just a chore. And I think, thankfully, with us, we benefit that, you know, obviously we've known each other for a long time. So speaking of things becoming a chore, I can write a first page of a script, which is massively detailed cityscape, completely abandoned.
Fuck you. So, like, because we've known each other for so long, like, I know if we have a serious disagreement, I can just beat the shit out of Andy and then we'll be sorted.
And then I take it, but then poison his food next time I come round.
Poison his Sunday lunch. Yeah. Bring...
put really slightly and like very minorly in an unnoticed way, damage the seal on his microwave door.
It's just like a Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
I've been feeling really ill recently and all my hair's fallen out. Oh, I don't know what that could be. Yeah. Glad we sorted that thing out though.
Yeah. You finished that page?
Yeah. I finish it before the end of the month just in case.
No, but, seriously though, like, it's good before you even get to any of this, you need to, there's got to be some kind of social following, right? Because otherwise when you put stuff up, you're limited to whoever sees the link to your Kickstarter, and most of our backers were people that had been like guys like yourselves, really, that had been drummed up. And it was all through Andy, really. So if you've got somebody, if you're working in a creative group and you've got someone that's specifically like who's good socially, then you should utilize it, because Andy's like, we're good mates, me and Andy, but we're like opposite sides of the same coin. Like, we agree on almost everything, but he's really social and I'm proper antisocial. So it just wouldn't have worked. I would have just done a load of artwork and then put it in my drawer, and then a little tear would have come out of my eye. But, like, obviously, Andy went to all the cons. He went on his own. He made friends, and then because of the way he is, he's cool and that, and he's a nice guy. You know, people, and he has that ability to infuse people with enthusiasm about the project that he's doing. Like he was talking about earlier. But that's also a really good trait. If you can pass that enthusiasm on, people want to see the project.
If you can fake that, Greg, you're right.
Yeah.
No, I agree, mate. That's a big part of it, is passing on the enthusiasm and getting to listen to you as well, you know.
I mean, I'm relatively new to the indie comic scene. Like, I've read comics all my life. I've had gaps in the reading and stuff, but Andy was the one that introduced me to the community, really, and fairly recently, within the last couple of years. So I was like, oh right, there's, I didn't realize that. I always knew that there was an indie scene, but I didn't realize some of the quality of some of them. Like, this is the place where I want to be reading comics, really, because I do like Marvel and DC and some of Image, but sometimes they're a bit hit and miss. Sometimes I feel like I'm reading the same shit over and over again, and you thirst for something a bit more, that's got something freer, something more, I don't know.
It's got to like be cleared by the board, right, before they put it out.
Something a bit more punk.
You know,
And you get that there. And my only regret is that I didn't give it a chance earlier, you know.
I think you'll find that with a lot of people. I mean, certainly I didn't publish my first comic until, you know, I spent about 15 years always thinking about it and never doing it and doing other things. It's not until you suddenly start doing it, you think, ah, this is what I want to be doing. This is, you know, this has quieted the voices. They're not speaking to me anymore.
I don't have to kill them anymore. I don't have to kill them and eat them.
I agree.
Oh dear. So obviously you've got your comic. You've done your Kickstarter, yay! You got a following. Now, what's the deal with conventions? Because obviously you've been at a few, you've been to a few events. Obviously, Andy's been doing a lot of research. If he's anything like us, he's probably stolen a million table ideas from people at every show. But what is your plan for Horde Comics in terms of moving forward with shows?
Right, we are. Yeah, we're booked. We're booked in. So, we are officially at this point. We're going to be at True Believers Summer in Gloucester August.
Nice one.
Cool. Nice one.
Yeah.
I'll see you guys there. Yeah, so we'll be there. I live in Derby, so Nottingham in October is already booked in as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Send us. Good man.
Yeah. Oh, good taste. Great minds.
yeah.
And then at the moment, I'm not sure they've officially confirmed the date yet, but I think we're going to do small press day over at the Awesome Comics, Incredible Comic Store in Swindon. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. So I believe we're going to go and do that, you know, with Sarah and co on the day as well. So we've got those three booked in already. I think they're the only ones we've set up tables for. I would say we're probably going to be at Thought Bubble for at least a couple of days for the weekend, maybe as punters. I've got one person who has spoken to me already, asked if we're at Thought Bubble, can I bring a copy of the comic along for him then? But we're not officially tabling or anything, so yeah. We'll just be around spending money. I'm going to see what else there is as well, because say we're both in the Midlands. I work in the Southwest, so my company's offices, so I've got a little base down there as well, so pretty mobile in terms of getting around. So I'm not against doing one further up north. I'm not against doing more around, so I'm just going to keep an eye on what the table bookings are, and then maybe we'll do another couple for the year. The success of the Kickstarter was nice in the fact that we made more than we were looking for the original run, so we have been able to get more copies printed than we were expecting. Nice. So we've probably got enough to cover us for a couple of cons. I have no idea. You know, obviously it'll be a nice situation to be in if we sell out and we have to get more, that's fine. But yeah, I'm looking forward to actually getting out there, meeting some more people, and you know, seeing the general folks come over and try and get the book out with more folks as well.
Yeah, I think.
And I think the
point,
main aim for you, the aim for you guys should be also to find a new art, is look for some artists at these things as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's always a good
opportunity, you know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we met again already. Like the guys we didn't find off the internet, and I think I've the only person I haven't mentioned I've been remiss to do so far is of course Gav Mitchell. Did Entombed, and that was a. You know, that was a story. I think it was the last one we put into the book, but it came out so well.
Awesome artwork.
Yeah, that one's right up my street.
Yeah, that's a good one. That one, really enjoyed that one.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, I really liked writing it. The Hawk and Cleaver guys did an audio version as well in the run up to the comic coming out.
Oh, nice.
I adapted the script to make it a bit longer to be like a 15-20 minute audio story instead of a comic, but it was a nice little crossover that we did that the guys put together for us. But it was really cool getting Gav on board with it. So we chatted to him about it at True Believers beforehand, earlier in the year. I sent him the script. He sent back a picture very, very quickly, and then we were good to go from there, really. And it came back as soon as I saw what he'd worked on it, the little roughs he put together. I was like, yep. Definitely made the right choice.
Okay, then. So, Horde Comics is awesome, but one last question before we get onto the shout-outs. Okay. Obviously, your story was Quiet, which is a great little story. That. How did you feel when the film A Quiet Place came out?
I knew you were going to ask me this. I was pissed off. That's how I felt. And then my wife was going, no, I'm sure it's different. And then have you seen it?
Yes, I love it.
The opening's pretty similar then.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are they opening in a little shop?
The storylines are quite clearly different. But
it is different, but it's got a similar title and a sort of a similar premise.
Yeah. And I think because obviously the film has come out now, whereas your story was in the making for years and years. So it's always timing, isn't it? I remember.
We've got the files dated. Krasinski's going to hear from my people.
Well, ours is better. As far as I'm concerned, we're a Bug's Life and they're ants. Yeah. You all know which the better one is, mate.
Your Star Wars and they're the last Starfighter.
Yeah.
Calling you out, Krasinski.
GoBots.
Yeah.
what a fabulous way to end this little conversation about Horde Comics. That was amazing. Yeah, thanks for that, James. I mean, it was good to finally talk about some contracts and stuff, which when you say the word contracts, I think some people think, oh, God, you know, it sounds like a dull topic, but personally, I thought that was fascinating, and I learned quite a lot. So,
yeah, I think like people are perhaps shy away from that sort of stuff. Like, if you just think the way you'd react to it, to somebody saying, "Look, we just got to talk about this, and then we can get onto the what the creative side of it."
Yeah,
you know, if you're a reasonable person, you'll go, "Yeah, all right." So don't get worried about it. I would just recommend that you do it straight away.
Yeah,
it's like, so much easier to do it beforehand rather than trying to negotiate terms.
The misunderstandings can be bad, man.
And even that is a collaborative process. If someone brings up contracts, it's not that it's not being dictated to you. I know, especially with freelance people that work with the big companies, they put together contracts for them that tie them into, you know, you don't own anything and you'll be glad for every scrap of thing. Like working between independent people, it's not about that. It's about making sure everyone's protected, and if the relationship doesn't go how you plan it, that everyone is treated fairly. So yeah, get on board.
Yeah, wise words indeed. As is everything that is wise on this show, don't you think? Yeah. I tell you what, that was an oddly highbrow conversation considering it all started with someone putting tiramisu up their ass.
An anthology book. It's catering to all tastes.
Yeah. Very true.
Cake in your butthole crowd, as well as the horror crowd.
Yeah.
important to start with the low-hanging fruit. Start with asses, and then you're talking about comics by the end of it.
So, before we get on to the recommendations, do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Yes.
Yes, why do you say it like that?
Go on, Tony.
Go on, Tony. I always say I've got a couple, and you always go, you always say that.
Why do you give me that voice? Do I seriously have that voice?
I don't know. You don't? No, well, you don't. No.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please.
I got an email from BHP, who we spoke about recently with Rock of the Reds. They have got a new venture coming out, Frank Quietly Drawing and Sketches, and it's a chance to have a look at the private sketchbooks of Frank Quietly. I saw it today. Nice. I looked through it. Fucking gorgeous, mate. Fucking hell.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Have you seen it, dude? Have you?
I haven't seen the book, but I'm aware of his artwork. I love his artwork.
Oh, yeah.
So
he works a lot with Grant Morrison, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. Yeah, so you get some stuff he did with Grant, actually. There's some sketches and original artwork and stuff like that from We Three, Pax Americana, and Jupiter's Legacy, and a load of other stuff that I hadn't seen before, actually. A lot of drawings, I thought, oh, that's a bit new. A lot of his design, character design, stuff like that. Really, really good stuff. It comes, it sort of piggybacks off the exhibition he had in Glasgow earlier this year, which was I missed, but would have loved to have gone and seen. If you go to www.bhpcomics.ticktail.com. I'll tell you what, this company's going places. We're talking a lot about them at the moment, BHP, and they're putting out some quality stuff. Rock of the Reds is pro quality. There's no doubt there.
Oh yeah,
and
great.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And this is equally as good. And the other thing is our pal. I've already backed it. Ken Reynolds' Cognition series back on Kickstarter, storming it once more. Like a British Victorian steampunk BPRD is the best way to look at this. Have a look for Cognition on Kickstarter, or go to kenreynoldsdesign.co.uk or Cognition Comic on Twitter, and you'll see it's the British Occult Secret Service are back, and it's a brilliant series, really worthy. I was speaking to John Otway about it recently. He bought a copy at a convention, really loved it, and I'll make him write by that. It's a great series. Ken's a good guy. Yeah, have a look at that one.
Go on. Oh, you just said it's a good book. I totally agree with you. I think something that Tony and Dan will agree with me on, I just want to give a quick shout out to a man who is very quickly becoming close to our hearts. He's buying our love in the way of giving us amazing artwork to look at. I just want to give a shout out to Cliff Cumber, who is he's a fantastic artist in his own right. Obviously, he's been listening to the show for a bit, and thank you very much, Cliff. But he's done a piece of artwork of Soho Red. He's done
punching someone's lower jaw off.
Which is amazing. We've got
he did an awesome Pendragon.
From Vanguard. And then he polished it off with a red mask from Mars piece. So he's made friends of all of us in one fell swoop. thank you very much for that. The engine's warming up to start work on back to back Red 4 and 5. So that's given me an extra bit of
oomph. I did read a tweet during the week that no artist will not like you sending them fan art. It's the best thing ever. So send your favorite artist a bit of fan art. They love it.
Yeah.
Or creator.
Yeah.
Or just draw around something, send it to them.
Yeah. No, Tony. Why do you keep sending me Swamp Thing?
this isn't a cookie.
Oh dear. Right, so we're a comic show, and as always, we've got quite a few recommendations, I expect, this week, because there's an awful lot of us. Our minds will be short and sharp, but let's recommend some stuff for the listeners. Who wants to go first?
Should we let the guests go first this
week? Yes. Yeah. Let them fight amongst themselves over who's going to go first.
Yeah.
Go on, Greg. Guys. I talk a lot. You go for it.
Right. Well, I'm okay. So, because I'm new to the scene, Andy has shoved a shitload of books in my face to read, and I've only just started reading them. I'm halfway through Samurai Slasher, and it's really cool.
Nice. Oh, cool.
It's really cool. There's like, they play with the artwork quite a bit, and then one of the stories looks like it's from the 80s, the way it's printed.
Yes.
Yeah. Andy W. Clift, isn't it? Yeah, really good.
It's really good.
The Clift is a class act, isn't he?
Yeah. It's cool, man. I like that. I like it when people play with the notion of comic book artwork and stuff. Mm. If it breaks a wall, I appreciate it more. So I suppose that, and
you got a treat coming on that one, dude, because you haven't read the most recent one about this. It's almost like an autobiographical story.
Oh, really? Is it good?
Really good, man. Yeah, a real different change of pace. One of my favourite books those guys have done. I won't say any more, but keep going on
Andy's
those books.
Captain Cosmic as well.
Oh, yeah, and that as well. That's
absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Cool. Have you got any of them, Andy, or have I got to buy myself?
I've got the lot, mate. You can have a look.
Captain Cosmic is available on Comic House. Check it out.
And I suppose, apart from that, what I've been reading, I tell you what happened. I listened to your podcast a couple of months ago. You know when you did the Accident Man one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, yeah.
That was like one of the first comics I ever read as a kid. My mom bought me a copy of it. So I was telling, I watched the film afterwards. It's not bad, is it?
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's mad, isn't it? It's proper mad. Which is really
it's
good.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It was good, man. I was telling my missus about it, and she went online and bought me a load of Toxic. And
that's a keeper.
More than one type of potatoes. Buys your comics.
if you want to see those sort of old 90s style comics with those sorts of stuff in, they're really visceral. The artwork's beautiful. Simon Bisley's done quite a few of those covers, like in his classic Simon Bisley when he's like everything's over muscled and veiny and crazy. And I think that's my favourite era of Bisley. So yeah, they're all on eBay. So check them out as well.
Yeah, might find some on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I used to really like The Driver when I was younger.
That's nuts.
I need to get hold of some of these. I really do, because I missed out on the Toxic.
They're really good.
Yeah.
My recommendation, I mean, I do my best to read an awful lot, so it's hard to pick, but a recent Kickstarter backing that, you know, arrived in fairly good time. The guys from Mad Robot Comics have just released their sort of take on, I guess, the regional detective story we get a lot of in in the UK, sort of Murder Most Mundane, it's called.
I've heard a lot about this one.
Yeah, it arrived. So the print copy arrived just the other day. So I read it earlier this week. Yeah, I won't listen to or watch Midsummer Murders in the same way again. You guys know what, you know, the type of stuff that they do. So it isn't just a straightforward, like, detective story. It's got some crazy twists along the way. But it's hard to say. It might be my favourite book of theirs they put out so far. It's certainly a good read. They're pretty active in terms of the convention scene, aren't they? So it's definitely worth a look if you catch them at one of the cons for the rest of this year.
Cool.
Nice.
Nice one.
Nice, yeah, one. It's hard to say more without giving much away. But,
that's the difficult thing about the recommends and stuff, because like you want people to check it out, because I think the best way to see a comic is to go in without knowing too much about it, is there really?
But yeah, it's
yeah. Essentially, we do a verbal noise podcast about a visual medium, don't we?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sometimes seeing it is the best thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd say, like, whether you're into that type of story or whether you're not, it's going to have something for you, because it's different enough that if you enjoy the genre, it sort of plays with it. And if you don't enjoy it, then it's different as well. So, yeah, take a flick through.
Nice.
Awesome. Cool. Who wants to go next?
V? Go on, you go, V.
Yeah, this is one that I read on Comic House, actually, recently. It's one that's had a successful Kickstarter for issue 2, which I'm definitely going to be on board for now that I've read this one. This is Lizard Men. You heard a bit?
I read it. It's good.
Yeah. It's good.
Story. The basic synopsis: riding a tidal wave of optimism, your new favourite singer is Prime Minister of Great Britain. Events turn even more unlikely when he and his plans for change meet the shape shifting lizard people that really are in charge of the world. That's your sci-fi comedy set up in a can. I say comedy because there's a real sort of satirical nature to the humour in this. It's quite dark. It's almost like when I was reading it felt like someone's just made Russell Brand the Prime Minister, because the singer who is
could happen
Dylan Zamani he becomes the new Prime Minister of Great Britain, and he is basically a rock star. There's a small there's a page at the beginning which in one page kind of tells you what kind of life he's had from being a baby to in 1976, and the last panel in 1997 is he shooting up. So several different periods of his life, and of course he becomes a massive rock star and getting in trouble with the police, and then the next thing you see he's become Prime Minister of Great Britain. And then just things, I mean, that could probably be a comic by itself, that kind of crazy. Although it's almost too close to home in this sort of climate these days, isn't it? That sort of, it's not unlikely anymore. That's what's crazy about it. But then you bring in the wonderful kind of like body snatchers, V kind of lizard people. There's a big mystery going on in the background. I think that's what I liked about the issue one. It didn't smash you over the head with too much of like reveals or tell you too much. But it gave you enough to keep you on board with the story. Like there's these wonderful sort of, I'm guessing they're villains because they're men in white suits, and they look like the man from Del Monte.
Yeah, he's a bit of an Ian McKellen motherfucker, isn't he? The guy that rocks up to his house.
And then it cuts to like a field, and then this huge sort of like gloop creature comes out of a black hole and morphs into a human being. So there's lots of different things going on.
It sounds like it's got a bit of a Vertigo feel about it.
It definitely feels like Vertigo or
Black Crown maybe.
That's what I was just thinking. It's that kind of vibe, which really surprised me. I mean, the cover is very striking. It's got that sort of Pink Floyd-y kind of.
Yes, I know what you mean. It has, isn't it? I can see it in my mind's eye.
Pink Floyd meets. Oh God, what's the Wicked and Divine? What did they do before that? What was the music comic?
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's got that sort of trendy album cover kind of thing. So the writer's Steve Horry, artist is Katia Fantini.
Phonogram.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
The colorist is Chiara Bonacini, and letters by Ken Reynolds. Getting another mention.
Oh, look at you, Mr. Reynolds.
Yeah. And there's top work by all. I wasn't quite sure. I mean, looking at it from the cover, I mean, the cover's quite striking, but I wasn't quite sure if I was going to buy into the interiors, if you know what I mean. But as soon as I started reading it, I was in. And before I knew it, the issue was finished. So issue two is imminently on its way, but you can read it now. If you've got Comic House, you can read it now. But I'd highly suggest that if you see it at a show, pick it up as well. It's good sort of British science fiction comics. So there you go.
Yeah, quirky sort of, yeah.
Yeah, it's quirky, it's funny, but there's a darkness to it. I mean, I have no idea. I think I've got a grip on what the story is, but I have no idea where it's going to go. And that's what science fiction kind of should be, I think. You've got to be constantly guessing. Yeah. So that's my one. Okay, who's next?
Nice one. You go, Dan. You go, Dan. Go on.
Mine's a webcomic called 10 Earth-Shattering Blows.
Oh, this looks brilliant.
Yeah. I came across this this week. I'll read briefly what it says. It's in about the comic section, and I'll read the first couple of lines, which is, 10 Earth-Shattering Blows is a fantasy graphic novel you can read online. It contains violence and occasionally a tit. this makes you a bad person if you enjoy it. So yes, absolutely great. It's a fantastic comic. It's only about 30-40 pages long at the moment, but one of the things that gets bandied around is subverting your expectations, and this does it in a great fashion. It's a story plays out. Yeah, there are tits in it. Tit fans. There's quite a few of them. And you think, you read the story and you think, oh, this is going to happen now, and then it doesn't, and something else just as great happens, and then it trundles along, oh, this is going to happen now, and then something else completely different happens, and oh, this is great.
I will say from that description, because obviously it says tit, people think, oh yeah, it's going to be a TNA fantasy story, and it's not that, is it?
No, not at all. It's kind of essentially the bare bones of it, a princess from upper class and refined society goes to kind of like a squalid kingdom to kind of ask for their help, and then the story kind of gets turned on its head from there, and it's really interesting. It kind of, for 30 or 40 pages, the author's built up such a world in, and it's just done such a great job. It's hard to kind of say what a great job I think it's a she's done. You should just go and read it, check it out. I can't wait to see more. And there's some couple of double page spreads which are Jesus Christ, that's like a couple of weeks worth of drawing and colouring. And consider it, they do it all on their own. It's a real kind of hat off moment.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no,
bastards. I mean when you sent through an image to us of what you're going to talk about, and immediately, I mean, the name alone was like, right, I'm listening. Go on.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, it's good.
See the artwork, and then you'll just want to read it from the beginning. I think, you know, 30, 40 pages, I think that's a good place to start if you're going to get on board a webcomic.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be an update schedule. Yeah. You just kind of, they just update it when it's ready, which quite novel, but.
Could be good.
Yeah, go for it.
Could be frustrating if they're putting a lot of work into those pages.
I think it might be one of those ones that come back every couple of months and then catch up on what they've done.
I like to do that with webcomics anyway, sometimes.
Have a
bulk of pages to read. Anyway.
You aren't too needy to read it when it comes out every time.
Yeah.
No. Bulk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you got, Tony?
Cool. I've got the new book from Avery Hill. Have you read this yet, guys?
No.
Which one's this?
We share the Dropbox. It's called The Great Northwood. By Tim Bird. 68 pages, full colour. It's getting released at LCAV, actually, so it's a good month or so ahead. It's been sent to us, maybe 2 months. And it got me properly juiced from page one, because it focuses on an area of South London that is part of my sort of formative years, really. My dad was born just in that area. My son was born there, and it's a wood. It's about a big wood that historically, you know, prehistorically, covered the area from Annerley and Crystal Palace up to Walworth and the Elephant and Castle. It's got Honor Oak to the east and Streatham to the west. It's covering that area, which I know you and I both know, Dan, don't we?
Yeah, very well.
Yeah. And we both lived in various areas of that.
much of the book follows a fox. Back to the fox. We talked about a fox 2 weeks ago. But much of the book follows a fox and his travels through this area, but in all the different time periods. The book opens on a chapter called An Ancient Forest, but immediately sort of plays about with you by showing it's a fox scavenging from a chicken box outside a South London chicken and kebab takeaway, as as I think every other shop in South London is a chicken and a kebab takeaway. And he plays on sort of iconography throughout it. It's a big motif of his. And he has, there's a sort of face of a chicken, like a cartoon chicken, on the front of the box. And this chicken gets closed up on at various points in the story as this sort of, look what the fuck we're doing to our world, kind of like motif, if that makes sense. And just above the head of this chicken is a panel that reads, long ago this was all rock and ice. You know, it's really, really clever, really well done. And the fox sort of jumps over a wall and finds himself trekking through a sort of snowy prehistoric hilly area. And it shows the evolution of the forest and the trees, and they also the land as the landscape grows. There's one scene I really like where the fox appears with a sort of, his eyes are sort of wide open, and there's a sort of starscape within his eyes, if that makes sense to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sort of particularly psychedelic sequence, and the camera then swings round through this sort of freaky sort of LSD tinged forest, and back there is the chicken box sitting there again in this forest. You know, really clever sort of telling book about, you know, what is going to come and what is going to happen to this world. It's speechless, there's no words in it. But there are this sort of word panels, if that makes sense. There's a narration that strings moments and landscapes together and stuff like that. It's got a real sort of poetry to it, really nice. There's a bit that says the music of the forest catches the breeze. There are secrets in the thickets and the tangled wood, mysteries in the undergrowth. And it reads like that. It's not an action comic, and it should never be.
Sounds very poetic.
It's gorgeous. Really nice. He talks about hunters and travellers, but rather than, for example, showing, you know, prehistoric man sort of attacking a monster or something, it's we're back to the chicken shop. And the travellers is a sort of urban bus stop with a night bus route map on it, you know. He moves back to sort of mystical bits, and you get little glimpses of elves and green men covered in leaves and stuff like that. I won't ruin the rest of the book, but that kind of what I'm talking about there gives you a taste of what it is. Tim does show, like, I know he's mentioned South London in previous books, and I've been reviewing Tim's book since I was at Beard Rock many moons ago. And
he won a British Comics Award, didn't he?
He did.
A couple of years
ago. Right. He did. Yeah, I think that was for Grey Area, which is another one of these books about sort of the geography and what it means to us, you know, how it changes and stuff like that. Everything he uses is very sort of shortcutted. I mean, comics is often about shortcuts, isn't it? It's about how we move from panel to panel, and the shortcut of showing an emotion or a movement or a travel or, you know, whatever it is. And he uses that really cleverly. He doesn't focus on faces. It's not about people. It's about landscapes. It's about the growth of a world and the growth of an area in South London. Really, really hypnotic reading experience. The colours are sort of purposely sort of washed out and interestingly sort of unblended. So they do rock up against each other. You get the blue of rocks against the brown of a tree and, you know, stuff like that. Really, really nice. It avoids the selfishness, I'm going to say, of the single person's point of view and uses the city and the geography as its sort of core character. And the only real character in it is this sort of curious fox that sort of runs around as almost like a silent narrator, almost like a guide, I suppose, put it that way. And what he does is he shows images, and then maybe 20 pages later he calls back to that image to give you impact in how things have happened. Very clever. It's a little quiet book, quite contemplative. There's no explosions, but then sometimes we don't always need explosions, do we?
No.
You know. It's he's also, incidentally, if you look for it, if you're going to the South London Comic and Zine Fair at Stanley Halls on the 14th of July, he's done a really lovely poster for that as well.
That poster.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Yeah, really nice. Yeah. If you find, you can find him at timothybird.co.uk or t_j_bird. Avery Hill, as always, are at averyhillpublishing.bigcartel.com or at Avery Hill PUBL. But do pop along to El Caf. I'm certainly going to be there. I'm going to be working with the No Brow people there. So pop along, and it's going to be a good place to get a copy. And I think probably Tim will be there signing stuff. He's a quiet guy, Tim, but he's a good guy to talk to about this. He's a thoughtful and intelligent guy, really good. And having seen, we've all been party to seeing the press releases coming out, and we're slowly seeing the preview copies coming out for what Avery Hill have got planned later this year. And I think it's going to be a big year for these guys, and some really, really gorgeous stuff coming out of them from some names that are cracking creators. Really, really interesting stuff. So keep an eye out for their stuff, but do buy this when it comes out. I think you can pre-order over at the Big Cartel. Have a look. Yeah, that's my one.
Nice. Yeah. Tons of great comics to check out this week, folks. Sorry for your wish lists and your wallets.
Yeah.
we've had a few people sort of saying they're blaming us for the money they spend.
We hear that, don't we?
Yeah. It's nice because it just means that people are reading good comics, and that's what this show's all about. Yeah. So thank you for listening. Thank you, gents, the Horde boys, for joining us this week.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah. I know you said to me on the message, Andy, you've had some really great guests, so thanks for slumming it with us this week.
Yeah.
Wretched dogs that you've got on this week.
No, it's cracking stuff, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty of our listeners who are going to check out your wares from now on. So, and we hope you do, folks, and we hope you enjoyed what we're talking about this week. If you want to know more, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to find out more, or just to ask us some questions. We like a question now and then. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, we've got an email that we like to receive letters and such for our own comic, and that's tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We haven't had a competition for a little while, have we? That's normally the competition go-to.
Yeah, that was quite a good competition we had before, wasn't it? We've got some really insulting emails around that one, which we like.
Yeah, and you might be seeing more of that soon, but we'll say no more.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. If you do the Book of Faces, then go to facebook.com/AwesomeComicsPodcast. And if you like talking about comics and how to make them, where to go to find them, etc., then join the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. We're getting lots more people joining that, and lots of great conversation going on backwards and forwards.
Yeah, there is.
There's lots of people asking, for a lot of like questions that I wouldn't have expected about, like whether it's, you know, making their own comics or what they should do for portfolios and stuff. There's an interesting one for portfolios. I put one up recently myself, which was just like, I just wanted to see what people's convention tables were like.
You do have a thing about that, don't you?
Yeah. I don't know why. That's one of my things. I just love it. I love it. So join that group. Thank you for listening to us this week, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe. It just helps get the word out about this show. And the more people that know about the show, more people find out about great comics. And hear the runts of the litter like Horde Comics. And if you listen to us on
the runts of the litter that called out a Hollywood director in this very episode.
Runts of the litter.
Guys, if you want to use that as an advert, you're still going to have to pay us. I'm sorry.
Sorry. You should have read your contract. If you listen to us on one of the networks, I don't know, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
How could I not say the two main ones that we love, Pod Tiramisu and Pod Arsecrack?
Together, at last.
Yeah. Push them together. Push them really close together.
Oh, God, I feel sick.
Because it's tiramisu.
Yeah, I don't like coffee. Yes, but where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezo, yes, on Twitter, EZOHYZ, neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. There you go.
Nice. Daniel?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Nice. You can find me @JesterDiablo on Twitter. You can find out more about my comic @TheRedMouseFromMars.com. And Horde, Andy, Greg, where can people find you and your good wares?
So you can find us collectively on Twitter and Facebook at Horde Comics. You can find me at the very modestly written at SuperNDT83. And Greg?
Greg Meissner, or at Greg Meissner on Twitter and Facebook. G-R-E-G-G. Don't forget the extra G.
Oh, you'll be sorry.
Well, you won't find me. It's just a pointless task.
That's point. Why you'd be sorry. Yeah. You've
don't type in
your
John
time.
Either. Yeah.
That's where you can find Horde Comics. If you want Whores, as I confuse them, it's going to add a work.
Yeah. You got to look for H-O-R-D-E Comics. not the comics that Tony's looking for.
Great title, man.
No, I love that title. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. Have a brilliant week. We've got plenty more great guests and shows coming up, so stay tuned to the Twitter. And, from Dan, Tony, Andy, Greg, and myself. Cool, that's quite a list, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And as always...
stay awesome.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, definitely stay awesome.
I'm not saying it still.
Oh, Jesus.
You'll make you do it on your own again, Tony.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
One day, I will break you.
a live show or something like that.
Yeah.
That's got me a little bit gorge.
Until then, have a lovely week, folks. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.